Goyim machdisim perisayin, they're toxic. Kedei lachayivon b'maisa. He says the earlier generations, they would bring in their fruits, meaning not just fruit, but you know, grain and things like that. Mm-hmm. They would bring in the products of the field. How? Derech Troxibon, right through the main front door. Some say it's like a yard which leads to the front door, but at any rate, the general interpretation of this word is the front door. Okay? Why? Because they wanted to assume the obligation of giving miser for these things.
You know, otherwise, openly they
brought
it in.
Right. They wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of giving miser, and so therefore they took it in openly. The reason why they're saying it like this is because we have in the Torah towards the end of in Parsha Kisavo, we speak over there that when you have finished giving the cycle of all the various misers, so at that particular point you have to make a declaration to the Rebbeinu Shalom. You have to say, Biarti HaKodesh Min HaBayis, I have removed all my sacred obligations from the house. In other words, I have fulfilled it and it's no longer in the house. So from this they learn then what? That when does it become eligible, or when does it become liable to being tithe? You know, the things that you bring, it's when you bring it in openly into the house. Okay? So then it becomes liable for miser. Alright, so we see that the earlier generations, they purposely brought it in into the house openly in order that they should be able to assume the obligation of tithing, right, of miser. But how about the later generations? Says Machdis and Perisei, and you know how they would bring in their fruits? Derech Gagois, by way of the roof. Derech Hatzeros, by way of the courtyard. Derech Kapifos, or by enclosed, also like an enclosed yards or something like that. The Kapif, they understand, is a place, you know, where you have a fence around it. Fenced areas. In other words, not through the door, but only, you know, in it, any other way, right? Why? Because they wanted to be potter, you know, they wanted to, they wouldn't have to then give miser on this. Of course, Tosfos and Rashi, they point out that, okay, this is because if it doesn't come in through the front door, there are troxbon, right? Then in that particular case, according to the law of the Torah, based upon the other Gershabash, it's not liable. But the sages themselves, subsequently, they passed legislation that said, right, that even if it comes in the other way, through the house, right, they have to give miser. But after all, we're talking about a time when this teaching, you know, was still in a state, you know, was still a flexible teaching. And we see that they purposely wanted to assume burdens because of the fact, you know, that they wanted to show their love for the Rebbeinu Shalom. The Amar Rabbi Yanai, as Rabbi Yanai said, this is the ruling, you know, which excused those that came in the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. He says, Ein hatevel mistayev b'maiser ad sheyireh p'nei habayis. He said that tevel means untithed food, okay? Nothing has been taken from it. Maaser wasn't taken, truma wasn't taken, and things like that. It's called tevel. Okay? That this food, which has not been tied, it does not become liable, mischayev b'maaser, it doesn't become liable for being tied, ad shiyireh p'nei habayis, until it actually sees literally the face of the house. In other words, you know, until it comes in through the front door. Shenemar biyati HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the pasuk says, I have removed my sacred obligations, you know, from the house. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, and Rabbi Yochanan said, Afkinu Chotzek Avas. Now he disagreed with Rabbi Yanai, and he says, even your own yard, can already accomplish this kavas. In other words, it makes it liable for giving ma'aser. Shenemar v'yochlu b'sharecha v'saveu, as it is written, and they shall eat in your gates, right, and they will be satisfied. So once it's through the gate, doesn't have to be the front door, but they are according to Rabbi Yochanan, then it becomes liable to die. Okay.
Well, this little quote here, Achlu.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where it's from? The only reason I ask is because I'm saying they will eat in your gates, and I'm wondering whether that's idiomatic or whether we're talking about two different people here. They will eat in your gates.
No, not really. You have to go back to the original pasuk and see what it is.
And you don't happen to know that one?
Yeah.
Well, I don't. I mean, can you tell me? No.
Okay, it's written. Okay, when you have finished giving all the tithes in the third year, remember, it runs in 3-year cycles, okay? Shanasa Ma'aser, right? Then you have to give La Levi, La Ge, La Yosem, etc., etc. And our sages say each one represents a different one. For example, Levi, he gets the Ma'aser. And La Ge, La Yosem, and so on, this is the Ma'aser Rodin. Remember what we said, that there are three different tithes. There's first of all the tithe that goes to the Levi, then there is the tithe that in the first and second years of the cycle, and again in the fourth and fifth years, this was what we called Ma'aser Sheni. This was taken up to Yerushalayim and had to be consumed over there, or redeemed for money, as we said. And then you take it to Yerushalayim, this money, you put it aside and you use it in order to buy over there. So that's Ma'aser Sheni. And then in the third year and in the sixth year, instead of Ma'aser Sheni, you give the 10% instead directly to the Oni, to the poor person. All right? So you have to make a declaration, okay? Right? And then you say before the Lord your God, Biyarti HaKadosh Ben Abayis, right? I have removed all my sacred obligations in the house. Vegam nisativ la levi la gela yisum yamun, and so the whole mitzvah so I share, you know, and then right levavet biyoni mimeni, I have also never made any use of it, and so on. So anyway,
so the achlu
biyachlu bisharecha v'saveu means that the Jewish people, in observance, you know, they will eat it. Bisharecha means simply in all Eretz Yisrael. This is what it means, okay?
My confusion is the third person, second
person. I know,
they're
two different persons, okay. I understand.
So,
but it's only the language that appears.
Okay, it's not saying that it's the poor and the Levite that were eating it.
No,
okay.
No. Yeah.
All right, sorry, okay.
Good minute.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go weiter, okay. All right, so chutz min hayayin. Now we go back again to the Mishnah. You remember the Mishnah, the beginning, speaks about ketzad mevorchin al peros. What bracha do we make for fruit, right? Mm-hmm. And at that time it said al peros or ilon, for fruit growing on trees. So omer bori pri hovetz. So we cite the bracha bori pri hovetz. Chutz min hayayin, except for wine. Right, because for wine it makes the proper berpiyagot.
Right.
So this is now what they're commenting on. Why does wine have a special bracha? Okay. Says Maishnor. Why is there a difference in the case of yayin? Ilaymo mishum nishtane luyi. If we are to say that the reason why we make a separate bracha for wine is because it has been changed for the better. In other words, not just a mere grape right now, but now it has been turned into something super special. It's now wine, right? So are we to say then that inasmuch it has been changed for the better, therefore ishtani levrocha, therefore it is also reflected in a change in the blessing, right? So now they say, how about olive oil? Yishtani levuye, it's better than simply the olive. Below yishtani levrocha, and yet we do not change the bracha. Bracha remains the same, so why should wine be
singled
exceptional?
Out.
Right, why should it be singled out? The Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel, even as Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, V'chenum Rav Yitzchak Omer Rav Yochanan, says Shemen Zayis Mevochim Alo Bor Pri Ha'Eitz, right? He said that when it comes to olive oil, let's say if you were to consume olive oil, you know what bracha you have to make for it? You have to make the bracha Bor Pri Ha'Eitz. So Amrei Hosum Mishum Zayevsha. So we say in this last case, in other words, the olive oil, right? It's not really possible to think of another bracha. Why? If we had to say it's impossible, Heichin Avreich, what kind of a bracha should we make? Navreich, if we should make a bracha, Borei Pri Hazayis, like, you know, we said Borei Pri Hagopen, right? Well, blessed be, you know, the, who created the fruit of the grapevine. So we had to say, blessed be Rabbeinu Shalom, who created the fruit of the olive.
Sure.
So it says, Pera Gufa Zayasikre. No. In the case of grapes, you have a word grape, or in Hebrew would be anovim, right? And then you have a word wine. And they're two different things. But in the case of the oil, and the fruit, and the tree itself, they have only one word in Hebrew for that. And what is it? It's Zayas.
But they refer to it as Shemen.
Yeah.
What else do they refer to as Shemen, besides Shemen Zayas?
Now, in the Torah, normally, if they use the word Shemen, it's really.
If Shemen means olive oil and Zayas means olive, then there are two different words.
Yeah, okay. But nevertheless, nevertheless, as we can see, it hasn't really changed the essence very much. The olive,
it hasn't,
right,
fermented,
it hasn't really changed,
yeah,
right. Whereas in the case of wine, it is a change in its essence. There's no question about it.
But with grape juice, it hasn't fermented, really.
Correct.
So, but you
still say Borei Pri.
But we still say Borei Pri Hagofen over the grape juice. Why? Because still, it's no longer just a plain grape that we're eating.
I'm not satisfied. But
all right.
Okay.
I'll say basket. That's all.
But you've got a
valid
right.
Yeah. Of course, obviously, the question would not have been raised if there wasn't, you know, something to justify asking this question. You're absolutely right. But as I say, they say no, because the fruit is called Zayas, the tree is called Zayas, so therefore, Benavri Chalei, and should we make a bracha over it, Borei Pri Eitz Zayas? Maybe we should make a bracha that says, we praise you, O God, who created the fruit of the olive tree, eight sides. Is this what we should say? So anyway, they knocked down the argument. Elo Amar Mazutra, but Mazutra said, no, the reason is, there is a different reason. What is the different reason? He says, Chamro Zion, Mishcho Lo Zion. Says wine is a food that gives you sustenance. You know, Zion is like the word zon, mozoin, and so on. Okay? So in other words, it is a nutritious food. This is what he says. Wine is nutritious food. But he says olive oil is not a nutritious food. In other words,
that didn't convince me. That one didn't convince me.
Let's understand. What does it say? A person can drink wine, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you know, you can take quite a large amount of wine that you drink and so on, and you feel that it's like a food that you take.
Okay.
Okay.
You feel better.
Whereas with olive oil, how much of your stuff can you take? You got to be drinking it like a sugar or something. Can't do it. We know that. So that this is the reason why it says. That's why it says in Zion. In other words, it's substantial food, the wine, and the olive oil is not. So substantial in the same way. Okay?
I have another theory in science for somebody wants to hear it.
Why not? Everybody's clear about it. Why not?
All right. Here's this. Clearly doesn't hold water, but water is the ingredient. And the wine was so powerful and strong that in order to drink it, it was mixed with water.
Correct.
It changed its character.
To dilute it, right.
So it was very definitely the wine that you drank, which you said the Barocco over, was really a man made or man prepared.
Yeah, that's correct. Correct. Absolutely so.
That's why it deserves a different book.
Yeah. Okay, very good. It's not mentioned over here, but it's a good word. It's a good vault. I like it.
Well, we write the tomorrow vault. Reb David. Reb David.
Yeah, the fact is that in the time of the Mishnah, the wine was so strong that they had to mix in water.
This is
why the Mishnah, speaking about the Seder, obligation to drink wine.
Four cups,
and so the expression that they use over there is mozginlo, which means literally they have to mix. The what do they mix? Of course, the answer is you have to mix a certain amount of water together with the wine in order to bring it down to the consistency where it is wine and it's not simply concentrated grapes. That's all. So now we said that there's a difference between wine and olive oil, right? That one is nutritious food and the other one is not to the same extent. So the Gemara says, well, what do you mean? He says, Mishkalo Zayin? You want to tell me that olive oil doesn't provide sustenance? Isn't it a food? The Hotnan, didn't we learn a Mishnah which says, Hanoider min hamozain, that if a person takes a vow and he says, I'm not going to eat any mozon, any food, okay? So if he takes a vow to that effect, then he still, it says, mutor b'mayim v'melach. He is permitted to drink water and he's permitted to eat salt. Ve'avinenbor. And in looking into this, they ask, what? Mayim v'melach udelo ikre mozon? We say then that water and salt are not considered mozon, because if he's taken an oath, any mozon, right, not to enjoy any mozon, and they give him permission to eat, salt and to drink water, so obviously then that doesn't fall into the category of mozon, right? Mm-hmm. Then in that case we have to assume, or kol milei ikre mozon, then we have to assume that any other substances are called mozon, right? So in that case we would say then they would say that this is a contradiction to what Rav and Shmuel, both of them, stated. The Amre, when they said ein mevorchim bore mini mizonos, that the bracha bore mini mizonos, right?
Cake, right?
Cannot be said elo beheha minim bilvad. It can only be used in connection with food which is prepared from the five species of grain. Because of what they are, it's wheat, barley, oats, rye, spelt. Those are the five grains.
Mizonos.
Yeah.
But that implies that I don't understand that. Because you don't have to wash the mizonos.
Correct.
So I don't understand the connection.
All right. No, the point is that these are cold mizonos. These are cold. In other words, if I would make a cake or a cookie or a cracker or something like that, okay?
All right.
So we know that no matter whether it's made out of grain, out of wheat or rye or barley or something like that, right? Oats. You have to make the bracha burim in the zone. It's the same thing would be true of cereal made of these things.
Okay,
like for example, you have cooked oatmeal, right?
Yeah.
So what bracha do you make?
Burim
in the zone. That's the bracha that you make. It's not just cake and cookies and
But you still don't have to wash for that.
No, I didn't say that you have to wash.
You said burim in the zone.
No. That's already a different problem. The bracha that we make after mezonos is a bracha al amicha v'al kolo and so on and so forth, which is really like sort of a condensed version of the grace after meals, except that it's only one bracha, which includes the, you know, the basic ideas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
However, I have to tell you that today we paskin slightly differently. There's no question that with these five grains, but you know that they have the following question that they it's already raised in the Gemara. Rice.
Yeah.
What if you have rice
cakes? Corn, maize.
And of course now with corn, same thing. Corn cake, corn muffin. What do you do? What broccoli do you make?
Menorah.
The answer, no, we don't. We say mezonos for these
things too.
But what bracha do we make when we finish that?
What?
The answer is very nefoshes rabbis.
Oh, okay.
Understand? Because the biblical grains would mean that you'd have to make that special bracha. But since these are not mentioned in the Bible, so that therefore...
you get away with the problem. Put
yeah, you say you're very nefoshes. Right. This is the difference between them. So if you eat, in other words, a rice cake, before you eat it, you should say bar min mezonos. But the bracha afterwards is simply bar min mezonos. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Same with popcorn. Right?
Yeah. Now, of course...
Popcorn, too.
Huh?
Popcorn, thank you.
Corn?
With popcorn, I'll tell you.
Don't tell me. I mean, tell me. But I got to argue not with you, but with the idea.
With
the rice cake is different.
Say shahakol niyavim.
But rice cake.
Why? It doesn't look anymore.
But does rice cake look
like
rice?
Yeah.
Does rice cake look like rice? I'm sorry to have this tone of voice.
I agree with you.
But
nor does puffed rice look like rice. But nevertheless, that's it's the way they pass it. So. Because rice was mentioned in the Gemara.
Okay.
Yeah, it's mentioned much later on, and we're not finished yet. We've only dipped into the brachas at this point.
We haven't even dipped one.
Right. I comprehend this. What you're saying is that Oreni Mezonos is set over derivatives of corn, rice. Also wheat, barley?
No question, also.
Wheat and barley, yeah.
Primarily,
even
it is.
Aren't wheat,
right,
barley,
right.
Spelled oats.
Right, right.
Forget about the other.
Okay.
So, rice cakes are considered a derivative, but it's also not considered one of the...
No, it's considered a grain. That's basically the reason why. Rice is a grain, but it's not one of the grains mentioned in the Torah. In connection, where you have to make a special product.
That's what you say in the Nefesh Shel.
Right, right.
You also say,
and corn is also used, right?
It's not in its natural state.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
It?
Yeah.
Not, okay.
So, that in general is what we would have to say.
Natural,
yeah.
No?
Okay. What if you have, for example, Pesach? They make cakes out of potato starch for those people who don't want to use matzo ball. Okay, what bracha do you make? Any piece of cake, cookie, so made out of potato starch. Is it the same thing as the corn or the rice?
Shakel?
The answer is no. Say shakel, exactly.
So you don't say pre priyadamah. Right?
No,
you don't say that,
you don't say that either.
You change the state.
But you say shakel, you don't say your name is sonal. But what is the logic for that? You're not saying your name is sonal.
Because
potato, not a cake?
It is now, right, it's a cookie, it's not a whatever. Okay? It's a piece of cake, whatever. But on the other hand, it is not mezainis.
Interesting.
It's a very fine distinction.
Yeah. So as we can see, there are technical areas, really, that are involved in here. But all that we're saying at this particular point is, a general principle. That Rav and Shmuel were of the opinion that mozon applies only to what? To the five grains. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't want to waste
time. Yeah,
good.
If I had a very embarrassing instance once in my life, not the most embarrassing, but
Well, I should hope not. Yeah.
At the Jewish Community Center, they have some sort of soccer thing. And what they do is they put on a plate a piece of cake with frosting and some ice cream on top of it.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there with a coupon, and the Christian soccer coach looked around and beckoned to me and said, "David, come over here and save the frosting." Not being really learned, I went, I think it was Dan Gertner, which one do I say then, you know? She says, "Well, I think you say Shabbat Kol." I stick it up there and I say Shabbat Kol. Beverly Couch runs on and says, "You did that wrong." So he come on to you. The correct one was Zonah. So now, which is it? It's an interesting question.
Okay.
Was it kosher cake?
And the two of them argue.
Well,
yes
and no. If the ice cream is only there, you know, like being secondary to the cake. You understand?
I understand.
Yeah, then in that case, it's the bracha for the cake.
Okay.
Because we have this principle that we'll be enunciating over here, and, you know, they quote it incidentally, that with ikar and tofel, in other words, the principal thing and the other one, which is secondary to it, then if you make the bracha on the ikar, then automatically it excludes, it excuses you from having to make it over the tofel. So in this particular case, right. Beverly was probably more correct. Okay.
What if they were nifrad? What if they were separated?
If they're served separately, then in that case you make a bracha for each one individually. Okay.
But if there was more ice cream than cake there, then you would say a shakel, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you're eating cookies and
right,
cookies
essentially
and
the cookie is only like a base on
like
which
base,
you put
so
the
like
ice cream.
A,
right.
Correct.
Okay, I appreciate that.
You could have
Thanks
been right. Probably was more ice cream anyway than cake.
Still the area of Brochus. That's a little time wasted. Okay.
We learn from everything.
All right.
Jewish people, intellectual
curiosity. I'm glad at least they had the present of mind to ask me to make a Brochus.
That's what I think.
Right.
The boy asked you to make a Brochus.
It gave me some pleasure to speak to them and, you know, try to find what was the correct Brochus.
Okay, so getting back, all right. So we now have the opinion of Rav and Shmuel and Amrei, right? Ein mevorchim b'orim in mezonos. The bracha b'orim in mezonos is to be recited only ela b'heyam in milvad, right? Only for the five species. Okay, of grain. V'yomer Rav Huna. So Rav Huna said, "V'omer kol hazon olai." He says that if a person makes, you know, he says that I take a vow to abstain from anything, right? Anodim in Amosan, as we said before. What he means is I'm taking a vow to abstain from what? Kol hazon. Everything which provides sustenance to me, gives me nourishment, okay? So, Alma, so we see what? Mishchot Zayin. We come to the conclusion, what? That olive oil does give
sustenance.
It does give nourishment. So the question is again, we're right back again. Why a separate bracha for wine, right? And not a separate bracha for the olive oil. Elo, we say, chamra soyid, u'mishkolei soyid. But we say, wine can satisfy a person's appetite, but mishkolei soyid, whereas olive oil cannot satisfy a person's appetite. So now they ask the following question, chamra misoyid, do you mean to tell me that if you drink wine, you are satisfied? The whole Rava have a shosha chamer komala yom the pisco. Then we learn Gemara Pesachim, which says that Rava would drink wine all erev Pesach keheche de nigrare lelibe, in order to have his heart literally be stimulated. In other words, in order to arouse his appetite, v'neichol matzah, so that he will be able to eat matzah tefeh, you know, a large quantity, in order that he should be able to, you know, I mean, they have this business of figuring out what is a kezayis matzah. You can go crazy, you know, according to everybody's
size of an egg, yeah.
Right.
A medium egg or a large egg.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean,
extra large.
There's no question that we have to eat a lot of matzah and pesach, you know, the Seder. So he would drink wine in order to stimulate his appetite till he wanted. Well, I mean, if this is what he did, then what is the implication? The implication is that wine then does not satisfy a person. It doesn't kill the appetite, right? So the answer that they say is tuvo gorir. If you drink a lot of wine, it will stimulate your appetite. But if you drink only a little wine, then soy, it's going to, you know, make you feel full and kill your appetite. Umni soyit klal. And now the question is, but tell me, does wine really, you know, give you that amount of sustenance that you feel satisfied? The Hotziv, isn't it written, the Yayin Yisamach Lebav Enosh? It's written that wine gladdens the heart of man, the Lechem Lebav Enosh Yisad. Whereas it is bread, which does what? That satisfies
the
appetite of a person. Literally, it provides sustenance, okay, or provides support. Namu with the soy. Hosek tells us that it's bread that gives us that. But chamra lo soy, but not wine. Elo chamra is beitarte. So we have to come back again and say, no, wine actually has two different things to talk with, okay? Soid or misameach. What does wine have? It has two different qualities. First of all, it makes you, you know, feel full, makes you feel that, you know, you really have partaken of something. Right? And at the same time, it also makes you happy. Whereas namor, bread, is misat soid, yes, it gives you that feeling, you know, of being satisfied. But it doesn't make you necessarily happy. So now he says that this is the case. If we drunk wine, then why don't we give a full benching after wine? Shalish brachos means literally three brachos. Why? Because originally the Birkat HaMazon consists of the first three blessings. Subsequently, they added the fourth one, you know, Hatova Ameitiv. Okay, but originally it was three brachas. Just as, you know, Shmoneh Esrei was originally 18 brachas, and then it became 19.
Yeah.
Right? So they asked the question, all right, then if we drink wine, why don't we give a benching, a full benching after it? So he says, Lo kabe inshe sudai siyalui. The answer is because people do not make a whole meal just out of wine. And that's the reason why you don't bench after it. So you say bracha, but you don't bench. Okay? Omale Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak le Rava. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said to Rava, he says, Ikova li sudati mai. But what if a person really used wine as the only food that he was eating and then said, you know, this was his entire meal, then what should he do? In other words, should he bench a full benching or not? We said a moment ago that people normally don't do it, right? But what if a person does do it?
Should he bench or not?
Right. So Amalei, so he said unto him, L'kshayove Eliyahu, the Yoima, when Eliyahu Anovi comes, so he was the one who tell us,
he whistled out of that one, didn't
right.
he?
So he'll tell us, you know, whether this is enough already, you know, to provide sufficient sustenance that we should make benching. But hashto miho, votladato etzakodim. But for the time being, nobody else is in agreement with the fact that he should recite a full benching after having partaken of wine. This business, yes.
Well, if someone makes a full meal,
right.
Wine.
Yeah.
how is he going to have a kapha not a seder beer kapha?
Okay. That's a good question, but we're talking about somebody who could really take a lot of wine and
cut the sugar.
Yeah, we'll meet. Sure. Yeah, we'll meet at 7 o'clock the next week. Okay. I just wanted to say that this last business that we've just had, this becomes in itself actually a very important point to this day. Namely, if you have made this as a surah, I'm not talking specifically about wine, but the food that you made, you know, that you've eaten, do you have to bench after it or not? This is a big problem. Obviously, if we have a piece of fruit or something like that, we don't have to, right? We just have one or two others. But, for example, they ask the question, what if you ate a whole meal and instead of eating bread, let's say you ate cakes?
Zonas.
Yeah, zonas. So, what do you do afterwards? Are you to consider it simply as cake and make, you know, simply the alanichi al kokola? Or are you to say that inasmuch as this actually was the principal food and you ate enough in order to feel satisfied afterwards, then in that case, you should bench?
Yeah, but they do that on the airplane. They give you mazonas.
Right.
Because you can't wine.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's supposed
question.
To give you mazonas. So there's a big question today about whether mazonas is mazonas, you know.
Yes.
I'm talking about the rolls, the bagels
rolls
and so on.
Yeah.
Right. There's a big question about that as to whether it should really be mazonas or should it really be considered lechem. And you have to wash for it. It's a big problem.
What?
I'm sorry,
on an airplane, if they give you rolls,
it
should be considered lechem and not...
Yeah, because he says it's really...
They claim that it was mazonas. Now, by the way, they don't write the word that anymore that it's mazonas.
Oh, really?
They don't anymore. I took a look. The word mazonas didn't appear over there.
What if you...
So, technically, you should wash.
If you wash and you don't say baruch, motzi lech menorah, okay? Do you still bench afterwards? Suppose you're on a diet, you don't eat bread.
Well, I'd say it would depend on the quantity.
Well, you're eating a full meal.
A full meal.
Yeah. You know, you have meat and chicken.
So
why would you
wash if you're not going to say the motzi? I don't understand.
Well, you're not going to eat bread. I'm asking a question.
Yeah,
I see your point. I
understand, but if you ate only fruits and vegetables and nothing else...
Well, there's meat, there's fish...
I understand,
Vegetables, there's...
And so on and so forth.
Soup, whatever.
I know. The question is, should you bench after?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Technically, if you haven't washed and eaten bread, then you don't have to. It's enough to say burn the flushes.
Technically.
But you can see the area, you know, which we are now coming into as to whether, you know, really it's enough or not. This is a big question.
Because it's really not so much the bread.
Well, I mean, I think that his example is really your example of someone. To me, one of the things you would look at would be the circumstances and routine of the individual.
Yeah.
So that person ate a certain number of times a day, and this is the standard time to eat.
This
is what he considered a satisfying meal rather than what he subjectively considered a snack.
Right.
And his example is that. Definitely is.
Except that there was no mezonos even involved in that eating.
Right.
He didn't mention
true.
That. That's the difference.
True.
But let's get back to the problem with mezonos, okay? Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the following question. It's a quote in the book. You go into the pizza store and you buy a piece of pizza. Mm-hmm. Okay. What bracha do you make of it? So he paskin that if you have only one or two slices of pizza, it's enough to consider it mezonos, right? And afterwards, you know, you simply say, the Roch Alam Yichri Al Kalkola. Okay.
Right.
But what if you eat more of it? Then in that case, it already falls into this category of, you know, that the Kavir Sudai. In other words, that this is already a full meal as far as you're concerned. And in that case, you should wash and bench. Okay. Finished.
Okay.
That's all right. Fine. Please make yourselves at home. Yeah.
Hey.
By the way,
this is interesting.
Yeah. fine. If not, we'll end a little bit earlier.
Was it catching from the rabbi or something?
I don't know. You know, my problem has been around already since before Yontif.
Yeah. All right.
Simply as to add to what you heard on the tape, the last one, you know, about the question of the pizza, okay? There's a similar problem in reference to the egg matzah. What is egg matzah? I mean, what is it made with?
Flour, water, and eggs.
Yeah. It's more than that. It's usually flour, eggs,
apple juice,
and juices, right, like
juices.
Apple juice or something like that. Okay. So, because of that, technically, there is a good opinion to say that the bracha for that should be Borei Min HaMitzvos for egg matzah. Okay? Because of the fact that it's not made in the usual way. It's made instead, you know, with a rich formula, so to speak, as the Gemara would call it matzah ashira, rich matzah. Okay? So that leads already, of course, to other complications. Number one, as we know, that during Pesach, an adult is not allowed to eat
egg matzah.
Why? Because it is matzah shira. It is rich matzah.
Bread of the affliction.
Right. And that's exactly it. I mean, we have to eat the bread of affliction, as we say, lechem oni, which is the expression that we find in the Torah. So, that's one facet of the business with egg matzah. But there's another one. Problem arises, and this has happened several times in fairly recent times. What do you do when Erev Pesach occurs on Shabbos? It doesn't happen too often, but sometimes it does happen.
Erev Pesach.
That Erev Pesach is Shabbos.
So you're talking in terms of challah?
Yeah?
You're talking in terms of challah?
In terms of what do we do? After all, we have two conflicting opinions, right? One is the fact that we are permitted to be chometzdik until, let's say, about 9:15, 9:30 in the morning or something like that.
That would be big Shabbos morning already.
Yeah, right, which would be Shabbos morning. I'm talking about exactly. I'm not talking on the weekday, forget about it.
You couldn't burn chometz, you couldn't do anything, yeah.
Yeah, you're not allowed to burn it. But how do you dispose of chometz, by the way?
Yeah.
You have to burn everything except what you might use for Friday night and Shabbos morning as chometz, okay? And then, if there's anything left over, what you're supposed to do is to flush it down the toilet.
I see.
But with that, we're not finished yet. Problem comes in about the fact, you know, that a lot of people are very uncomfortable about having chometz around the house when everything in the house is already
Pesach.
So what do you do under those circumstances? Well, the strict opinion, that is the strict test, okay, the strictest opinion would be that, all right, you set aside a little area where you know it's going to be chametz. Make sure that, you know, it's not going to get involved with anything Pesachic. And you use challah and everything else and so on. But, of course, you have to make sure that you finish your meal early enough Shabbos morning so that it's within the allotted time span for eating chametz. And for that reason, whenever it has occurred over here, we've always made a very early minyan. We started the Shabbos morning at 7 o'clock over here. Instead of davening at, and you know, we didn't have any sermons or anything, we just zoomed through the davening. Either 7 or quarter to 7, we started davening or something like that.
Shabbos morning.
So that we could be finished early enough. You could go home, you could make hamotzi or something like that over the challah. And then after that, if you want, you can remove the challah, you know, and as I said, the crumbs and stuff, I mean, that you could remove, okay? And if you felt like eating Pesach stuff afterwards, you just rinse your mouth, and, you know, and then do that. So that was one solution.
But you you're not allowed to eat matzah until the Seder, and that's Saturday night already.
Correct. Regular matzah definitely couldn't. So that, therefore, there is a more lenient opinion. Lenient opinion is the fact that you are permitted to use egg matzah as the bread, okay?
As the bread for Shabbos.
Correct. In other words, for Friday night and Shabbos morning, you could use egg matzah, okay? After that, I mean, you couldn't do it because you can't eat it all day long. There's another rule also that applies to the Seder, and that is that prior to the Seder, There's a law which says that you're not allowed to eat any suda, in other words, any regular meal, once the afternoon has begun. Basic reason being, of course, I mean that so we should have an appetite
to
eat the food that we're going to eat at the Seder. And particularly because at the Seder night we have certain foods which we are commanded to eat. It's not, you know, simply a question of choice. I mean, for example, a similar rule would apply to Erev Shabbos. But Erev Shabbos, I mean, nobody's going to tell you, you know, for example, that you must eat this and this amount of food or something like that on Shabbos. Okay? But with Pesach, yeah, we have to eat a gezayis matzah.
Which in some opinions is a whole matzah.
We have to eat again a kezayis moror, we have to eat a kezayis this, the kezayis that, and with wine you have to have at least 4 cups of rabias. I don't have to tell you, you have all these measures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are very, very exacting when it comes to the measurements. I know I always use a certain chart that was put out a few years ago. I think it was by Teferes Yerushalayim or people who are connected with Teferes Yerushalayim, in which, you know, there's a diagram as to what is the size of the matzah that you have to eat, what is the size of the moror that you have to eat, particularly if you're using, you know, not ground horseradish, which can be used.
Use lettuce.
Right. But if you're using the romaine lettuce, exactly. So in that case, it has to occupy a whole area, something like that, and so on. So, getting back again to the business of the egg matzah, that they permit, therefore, under the circumstances, to eat Friday night and Shabbos morning Erev Pesach. Okay? But the question is, what bracha do you make? Do you make mezonos over it? No. You make a motzi. Now, what is the justification for making a motzi on this when normally you wouldn't? So this is the answer, exactly what we learned, that what? Kovisu daitu. In other words, this becomes the main course of the meal. And because you eat a...